Hey, everybody, it's Connor. Welcome to April in the Hoopercast land. Normally, when I choose to do content blitzes, it is March, because March Madness kind of makes sense. I just did not have the content ready this year for that. And I had decided at the last minute to do it for reasons I'll go into when it's time to go into it. But I decided, yeah, let's give you some extra podcast episodes. So April will be that month this time. So it's April 2nd. Welcome to the first of the bonus episodes. So Kellen was on with me to talk about Mike Flanagan. That's actually the one you would have just listened to. So we decided in that episode, if you listened to it, that we needed to take some time to talk about the Jet Li film from 2001, and The Beekeeper, the 2023 film by David Ayer starring Jason Statham. And then we just sort of talked about movies in general and middle budget, low risk, low bandwidth, low pressure films that are simply there to entertain you and don't have to be this big meaningful thing or cost all this money. And so probably a broken record for you if you're a regular listener, but it's always a discussion worth having, and Kellen's a lot of fun. So we decided to do two episodes. So this is that episode. So enjoy us talking about The One and The Beekeeper. I want to talk about The One.
Okay. Wait, I want to tell you to go watch Beekeeper if you haven't seen Beekeeper.
Okay, we'll talk about The One first, and then we'll talk about Beekeeper real quick. Okay. Hello, everybody. This is just a quick little episode here. We're not done yet, me and Kellen. I want to talk about The One because it came up during the Mike Flanagan episode, and I have so much love for this film. So I'd like to discuss it.
The people have found you guilty of 123 counts of first degree murder and 123 counts of unauthorized travel to parallel universes.
There's never been anything like what I have become.
For these crimes, you have been sentenced to life without the possibility of return.
Are you ready?
Are you?
Freeze! Escaping.
There's only one place he could be going.
Not a problem.
What if there was a killer traveling through parallel universes and he looked just like you?
The good news is you're not crazy. The bad news. Before I saw him, I felt him. It was me.
What if he would stop at nothing to take over your world?
Each time he kills one of you, the energy divides among the survivors.
He's close to you, lost strength.
Maybe it's part of what's been going on with you. People get older, Gabe. They don't get stronger. They don't get faster all of a sudden.
If we kill him, this whole universe could go with him. I just need to do it one more time. No! This is the only way to stop him. My own design. Yeah, that'll work too. Miss me?
So, The One was a 2001 film directed by James Wong, starring Jet Li, Delroy Lindo, Carla Gugino, and a not bald Jason Statham. And
he wasn't.
No,
I just watched it. How
like
did that
he was
not...
balding. Like it was like high hairline, but he was not bald. Yeah, go look at pictures or whatever. But it's interesting that we're talking about the one now in like the towards maybe hopefully the end of this multiverse craze. I'm almost surprised it didn't get like a. So I'm surprised the studio didn't like rush it for a remake. Just because it involves. It's weird. The interdimensional police division in this movie is the Multiverse Authority, the MVA, which is pretty close to the TVA. but it really kind of is, and maybe that's why, because it's too close to the TVA. Because the plot of the one is there are 124 universes. That is the extent of the multiverse. And if you go into another universe and kill the alternate you, the life force and energy of that person gets distributed to all of the remaining versions and you get a little stronger, faster, smarter. And so if the it's like a legend that if you were to kill all of your variants, you would become the one. And so not just if you die, like you have to kill the other one. So I guess you can only become the one if nothing, no accident has befallen your variants. So maybe the younger, the better is your chances. So in the movie, Jet Li plays multiple roles, but the two main roles he's playing are Yulaw, who is the bad guy, who has already been like sentenced to death for murdering 122 people or whatever. I think in the first scene, he kills one of his variants. And so he's trying to hunt down the last one. The last one is Gabriel Law, also Jet Li, a very nice man who's a police officer. He's married to Carla Gugino somehow, and has noticed over the last few months that he's been getting faster and stronger, but he's not thinking that much about it. It's just sort of mentioned for exposition. Yulaw shows up at some point and tries to kill him, but obviously Jet Li doesn't want to, or I say Jet Li, that's not going to help us here. Gabe does not want to kill Yulaw outright because he's not that kind of guy. And also because no one really knows what happens if you actually kill the last variant. Like there's speak of like, it could just collapse the universe, or you become a god, or whatever else. So it's a fun movie for 2001 that is featured with just a lot of fun martial arts from Jet Li and mixed with superhuman feats of strength, like picking up a motorcycle and crushing a guy with
hell
it.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So cool. And one of the many attempts to recreate bullet time post The Matrix in the early 2000s. But it has a, I still really like the opening sequence where Yulaw kills the third remaining variant who's like a prisoner in exchange. And it's set to the song, Let the Bodies Hit the Floor by Drowning Pool.
Oh, Drowning Pool. Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah. And it's just all the cops are run, let the body. And he goes into slow motion and they're trying to, and he's just, I remember watching like a VFX breakdown of that. And he's literally just hitting tennis balls on a string. And they're animating those cops. He's just running around them quick and throwing them, and they're just falling slow motion. And they're just like cool sound effects. And I when I was like a, you know, I'm 12 year old, I was like, yeah.
Do you feel like so when I go back, I've been going back and watching older stuff from like eras of my childhood and growing up, you know, from like early 90s.
I have a running project where I watch films that are 20 years old.
Oh, like in a shifting window?
Yeah. Oh,
that's
a
good idea.
So like I do it. So right now it's 2004 films.
So
I watched The Terminal like a month ago and I was like,
considering doing that too. It's one of my favorite Tom Hanks films. But one thing I've noticed is that like, if you ask me on a bad day, if I think that, you know, well, yeah, humans in general, if we're improving, you know, I'd say no. But like, if you ask me, like, if film is an art that is dying or coming into its own or something, I guess my opinion would kind of change. But I do feel And maybe it's because of the type of media I am consuming and choosing to watch these days. But like, I do feel like filmmaking is just getting all around better. And maybe that's just bias towards kind of like the way the market is going now, you know, with indie films kind of rising up, the A24 kind of revolution sort of thing. But there's something, I have to say that there's some lost nugget of just like whatever the movie equivalent of butt rock is. Like you just said like, movie. You know, Drowning Pool was actually like a Drowning Pool song. Let the Bodies Hit the Floor was licensed for an action movie. And I'm like, we've kind of lost something. You know what I mean? Yeah. That type of shit doesn't happen anymore. And if it does, it's like one of those asylum films or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely tongue in cheek, where like in this movie, it was sincere, like, this is going to be fucking sweet. Yeah.
So there's like a whole, like, there's a lot of types of films that aren't made anymore. And they're basically anything that could be made on a lower budget. It's just not made anymore. I'm assuming you saw the Oscar speech where the guy was like, instead of making one $200 million movie,
I mentioned it in the Dune review, the guy who wrote American Fiction. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cord Jefferson.
So one of the things that I think happens is that like, that's why, like, you know, we haven't talked about The Holdovers, but like The Holdovers felt like a movie that didn't get made anymore. And that's why I really enjoyed it. It felt like I was watching a movie from 30 years ago that I just didn't see. And in a very different direction.
That's what a lot of people said about that.
You know, watching Jet Li's The One and like all those types of movies that came out in the early 2000s.
Romeo
like
Must Die. Yeah.
There's a certain amount of like schlock that I feel like we're missing out on these days.
It's because it feels like there's no pressure on the movie to accomplish anything except entertain you.
And if we are sticking on that track, I think you will really enjoy The Beekeeper, because that movie, that movie is really close to this type of thing. I will say, like,
so The Beekeeper. So
you're a blessing, Mr. Clay. This place was crabgrass and weeds, and you brought it back to life.
Mrs. Parker and I were friends. She was like family. She was the only person who ever took care of me.
I just got a message saying that there's a problem with my computer.
Yes, ma'am, we got this.
Yesterday, she shot herself.
This is private property.
Do you know what they do here? Scamming the weakest in our society.
Buddy, I'm count to three.
One, two, three. There, I did it for you.
No, you can't take it. No, you can't.
I'm gonna burn this place to the ground.
You can't take that away from me.
Will you stomp his ass out?
You're telling me one man did this. The only thing you know is he's a beekeeper.
A beekeeper? A beekeeper?
Well, that's not good.
Beekeepers is a special program outside the chain of command.
I protect the hive. When the system is out of balance, I correct it.
We have laws for these things.
Until they fail, then you have me.
My fingers, they cut them off.
Oh, what the fuck, bro?
Don't move. This is much bigger than a little phishing scam.
You're going to get what you deserve.
The money's going all over the world. To people in finance, even government.
You are a problem. Goddamn right, I'm a problem.
No way he's coming here straight through the back entrance.
I figured I'd give the firefighters a break.
Somebody detain this guy.
Ah! We have to kill him before he kills his way to the top.
Honey?
It's flammable as fuck. Who knew?
I see those promos for it in the trailer, and I'll just go, well, this looks terrible. So, and then like I would see promos that see like just little things like to be or not to be. I think I'm going to go with to be. And I'm just like an unskippable YouTube ad. And I'm like, please stop. And then like, all I hear from people is it's pretty good. And I was like, this cannot be.
I'm sorry. I'm crying laughing just because I guess I didn't realize how much I wanted to talk about this movie. I don't like Jason Statham. I'm always like, dude, you don't play a character. You just get on screen and do you. Yeah. Like, even his roles in, Hobbs and Shaw, whatever. I don't remember which one he is, but like, yeah. I generally like him. And so if somebody was like, go see a movie where he is literally like the guy that you're there to see it for. No. So friends of mine, like a group of us, we jokingly
for Crank.
Well, that's kind of like a role made for him. So yeah. that makes sense. But we went to Godzilla Minus One at a theater, like a Regal. We never go to a Regal, but we had to just for that one because the Draft House wasn't playing it.
I love that sentence. Yeah, we don't normally go to Regal, but we had to this time. Yeah. Regal.
So we were watching trailers that, you know, usually wouldn't be stuck in front of most things that we'd see at the Draft House. So, and the Beekeeper trailer played and all of us were losing our shit because at one point they were like, did you know honey? Like he uses a jar of honey as basically a grenade, like an incendiary grenade. And somebody was like, did you know honey was flammable? And he's like, no. And like, and we just, I don't, anyway, we're all losing our shit. And we're like, we're going to go see this movie. I forgot all about it. And then my friend Carlos was like, so are we going to Beekeeper this weekend? And I was like, shit, are we? We got like six of us together to go see it. And like, we were laughing and stuff, but I was laughing a lot more. And there was this one guy two rows ahead of me who was like my laugh buddy in the movie where he and I would find the same shit hilarious. And then like sometimes he would find something funnier than me, but his laugh would set me off. So this whole theater just became the two of us just like fucking ping-ponging off of one another. And I laughed my ass off at this movie. So if you want to watch something that like there's some fun action sequences, there's some funny kind of action gags, I guess you'd say. And then just generally like, someone took the knob of reality and turned it up a ton and like this world would never happen. None of the things that could like that's not how cybercrime or any of this shit works. But like it's just watch it. It's fun.
OK,
maybe imbibe something or ingest something before watching it. a friend of mine that didn't go see it with us, he added it to his Plex server. And I was like, you got to watch it. And he's like, I don't know, man, this looks stupid. And I was like, just get real high and watch it, man. And he did. And he was like live texting the whole time. He's like, wow. This is the greatest shit I've ever seen. There's a part where he straps a guy to a car and drives it off a drawbridge.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And like, it looks hilarious. The rag doll. Oh, my God.
It did well. It made almost four times its budget back.
Well, now I want to know what the budget is because that felt like an old type of action movie.
It was $40 million budget.
That's more than I thought, to be honest with you.
I mean, that's less than the one. The one was like $50 million, I think.
Adjusted for inflation or what?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. That's a good point.
That can't like, have been that expensive.
Like 23 years ago.
So when I was watching that, I was like, this feels like an old dumb film. Like I didn't like the Transporter films. Mm-hmm. But that was the type of film that was being made in the mid 2000s that just doesn't really seem to get made, like especially action now has to be a $200-300 million fucking dollar movie.
Yeah. And sometimes you wonder like the trade off, like, OK, the Transporter I like because it's just a simple like it's just someone thought of a cool premise and you know, it's just an action vehicle for Jason Statham. But then those movies have other downfalls like. Horribly written women or
they're not well shot.
Some of the line delivery is just terrible.
I was going to say a lot of the action set pieces were too lofty for the capabilities of computer generated imagery that they had at the time.
Yeah. Sorry. Or even physical filmmaking rigs. Low frame rate slow-mo. It's like, okay. It's,
oh God, I hate that.
Don't do that.
That was
please.
Such a thing in the late 90s and early 2000s. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I went back and I blurry. Watched Gladiator and it's all over that movie.
I know. Yeah. Dustin and I were talking about Gladiator for when we did the Dune review actually. this is another thing that like is bothering me more as I age and, you know, more than it did obviously when I was like 14, but like gratuitous sex in movies, which doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. We're already prudish with films these days.
Right.
I think that's the Disney, the Marvelification.
But like, but also like my standards for why and when that happens in movies has been raised a lot. So like when you watch a movie like The Transporter and it's just like, I'm just going to sleep with this lady. And you go, okay. I mean, go ahead, but boy.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just my testosterone having just depleted and left my body. But I think it's also like me going like, okay, I suppose so. It's just really stupid, you know? But yeah.
I mean, it definitely was a thing to get butts and seats back in the day.
Sure.
I think the problem with it now is that like there's such a tightrope to walk for representation and how you treat people in those
representation, consent, like yeah, that's the whole thing.
But I think it's snapping back the opposite way because like I think I saw something about how millennials were like, why are movies so sexless now? But Gen Z is like, yeah, that has no place in films. It's like the next generation is even more
pretty. Yeah.
Like you would think that, you know, millennials were the generation that that like sex positivity became a very important thing. And now Gen Z is like on the sex in media.
I saw that there's like an article about it and their thing is all about like it doesn't service the plot. It's like, OK, well. Guess what, Shakespeare? You know, it's not just about the plot. It's about, you know,
humans.
It's about character. And it's easy for anyone to joke and be like, plot? What plot? You know, I'm here to see naked people. But like, but for real, like that's character. Like, yes, there's a seedy, like corporate reason to fill your movie with nudity. But like, but people, this is something people do. And so like in the right context in a movie, it's actually a really important part of storytelling.
Yeah, it humanizes people too.
Right. Now, was there too much of it for not a lot of good reasons in the early 2000s? Yes. Yeah. Were there creepy directors like Brett Ratner? Like, yes. You know, has the pendulum swung too far the other way? I think yes.
Yes.
And I think if the pendulum were just to fall back to the middle where it's like, let's bring those back, but let's make sure there's like good. And honestly, this is going to, I'm going to sound like such a, as they call them, a cuck for saying this, but like, I feel like that comes with more women being in charge of things and like writing more movies and directing more movies and being higher up in the studios, because it was those kinds of changes that got like those people on set who were there on days where they're shooting sex scenes and their whole job was to like, liaise with like the actor, like just to make sure, like to advocate,
to make sure that the depiction was the way that they want. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically to advocate for them. So the actors and actresses didn't feel like they were kind of backed into a corner or pressured to do stuff. That person could go, hey, like they agreed to the, you know, just an extra voice in the room. And I wonder if just decades of it being men selling movies to mostly men, just being like, just takes her shirt off. What?
It might just be culture. I mean, I've seen enough episodes of, you know, we always talk about Red Letter Media. I've seen enough episodes of Best of the Worst to know that like rape as a plot point was a lot bigger of a thing in like the 80s. It just felt like something that they just threw out there as a way to subjugate the woman and make them like the damsel in distress kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that went away, but mass appeal and mass market, the maximum amount of eyes need to be able to sit and buy a ticket for your movie to make your profit back. So like all these bloated budgets can't shut out 13 and under, or what is it? What's R? What is R? 18?
17.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, it would be really interesting to look at the stats of like how many R-rated films come out a year compared to PG-13 and G and PG and stuff like that, because I bet you not as many R, big budget R films coming out. And that's, you know, when I say the Marvel Disneyfication of things, I think it has to do with budgets, with market appeal. And basically like they make those Marvel movies so that literally every demographic could go see them if they wanted to. And I'm putting titties in a movie or dicks in a movie is an immediate way to shut out a huge portion of your audience that you're wanting to get
money from.
The point is, like, yeah, just because, I mean, I can tell you that, like, just because of the math that studios do about the money you're throwing away by making a rated R film, most movies are going to be PG-13 so they can sell the most tickets. Mm-hmm. But of course, the key is if you're making a bunch of middle budget films that can cater to adults or that are for adults, you know, then it doesn't matter that it's rated R because that's who the film's for anyways. And you're not risking a ton of money because it's only $30 million or $10 million.
It's such a wider conversation, and it's almost one of those things where it's like, how did we get to this point? How does everybody feel like the only way to make it is by absolute crazy risk?
Yeah, I don't understand that either, because no sensible, there's literally a saying like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And the studio was like, but I got a big basket.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Why wouldn't I?
But this basket's got Mickey Mouse ears on it.
Don't tell me what to do. Like, it's literally not what you do. It's not how you're encouraged to invest your money. You're supposed to diversify. If you want to learn to cook, you don't cook one thing. You learn several things to cook. So you can cook with, you know, any number of regular ingredients.
Yeah.
That's just what you do. And for them to just operate the opposite and say, we're only going to make gigantic movies with gigantic budgets, so hopefully we can make a gigantic return. It's like, yeah, but doesn't it bother you that if this movie fails, you could just lose your job? Like, this one movie fails? To me, it's like going to Vegas and gambling versus, like, I'm just going to play online poker in this amateur field, and I'm just going to make, like, you know, a few thousand dollars a month. I'm not like filthy rich, but I'm consistently making and keeping money. Why don't you just do that? Isn't that more conducive to paying people and having a life and being happy?
Well, and it also contributes to like so many conversations. You know, Dustin and I are working on this show, and the climate in not just animation, established IP is king, is the phrase that I keep hearing. It's like, that's only because you think the only thing you can do is throw up. It, like, what's the cheapest like mainline film that's kind of, like 80 million seems to be what they consider a low fucking budget these days. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The Creator, I think, was 80 million.
So it's almost like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because people are like, you can't. No, established IP is king because we can't risk it on a new thing. And it's like, well, yeah, you can't risk $300 million on a new thing, but you can risk $20 to $30 million on a new idea. And guess what? If it takes off, your returns on that investment are huge. It's crazy. I just don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, even Dune, I think Dune had a $140 million budget. And then I think part two had like a 165, but Dune one made like $500 million. And
yeah,
Dune two probably will as well.
For the prestige level of those films, that is that is a lower budget for what you would expect. Yeah.
To do it at under $200 million is, you know, when Dustin and I talked, we compared it to like, you know, Indiana Jones, like a movie like that, that was supposed to be a big deal event film, having a, you know, over $300 million budget. And like, no one even really talks about it anymore already. It's like,
it's because the money didn't go to the things that mattered for what it should have been.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it goes to bloated payrolls for actors, you know, top level actors, but I don't think it's all their fault.
We were talking about like how much of it gets wasted on senseless marketing. We did touch on VFX in that, because it's like VFX, so like those people need to be paid fairly and well for the labor they put in, but how much of the labor that they're putting in is uninspired and senseless,
unnecessary
filler? Like saying, just put some aliens and ships on the screen and we'll do it all in post, instead of someone saying, hey, I have like, here are my storyboards. Here's how we're going to shoot this partially practically. Here's the vision I have for this. I know every frame that I need for this shot, and I'm not going to, because that's really the difference in like $50 million in your VFX budget or not, is a director just knowing what they're doing and having a plan to capture it practically for the most part. Like, you're going to tell me that you're going to give $100 million to Christopher Nolan and $100 million to some other director and then be like, okay, the other director needs more money because that whole $100 million went to their VFX budget because they don't know what they're doing and they have no vision. And Christopher Nolan's like, I got $20 million left over because I know how to do my job and I shot this all in camera. and just sort of cleaned it up with this budget. Yeah. And now we're going to McDonald's. I certainly would like to see smarter use of budgets and risk being allocated to just the way things kind of used to be. And I honestly have hope for like the physical media market bouncing back a little bit. Even though it's decreased and Best Buy has pulled them and everything, I, at least anecdotally, I feel like there's a resurgence in physical media happening. And I think that ironically, streaming brought that on. Like streaming first, like got rid of it, like caused it to sort of recede. And now that streaming is so expensive and exclusive and varied, people are realizing, I'm going to lose access to stuff.
Yeah. Cause we are. You're right.
Most people are like, I'm not just going to pay for a service year round. And I'm not going to pay for all of them year round. And even the ones that you do pay for that you like, they don't keep those licenses forever. And so people are finally understanding that and buying physical. And I think if physical bounces back, studios will go, well, shit, if there's a DVD market again, then we'll start taking more risks on middle budget because we might make the money back.
I think you're right that people are finally getting hit with the effects of over-reliance on streaming.
Yeah.
Because there's a video game YouTuber that I watch sometime. His name is Dunkey. And he has this one YouTube video that's basically a joke about like how all these long running series of films and how, you know, this number two is on Vudu and number three is on this service. And the whole thing is like a teardown of how convoluted and stupid the streaming market is right now. If you want to like find something to watch. But what I think is going to happen is, you know, I think the certain consumer is becoming aware of that. But what it's going to become is the way that the vinyl market is for music. It's going to be a retro minded thing and it's going to be a big market. Like, vinyl overtook CDs like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And CDs have obviously completely almost disappeared, but, vinyl is a thriving, healthy market, but it is not a mass market. That's the thing. So I think the best scenario, or at least the most likely one, is that physical film purchases will be the vinyl music market for films. If that makes sense, a certain consumer is going to get it and they're not going to buy a ton of films and stuff like that. Like,
sure.
I have 25 vinyl records. I have, who knows how many CDs, but I don't know where they are. You know what I mean? so for me, I am not a cinephile to the point where I have just the DVDs that I had when I last bought DVDs, but I know that, that you, John, and Dustin are completely different. So I really hope, and I think that because there is a demand, at least, you know, you guys anecdotally are a sign of it, that it should hopefully come back. I just think Disney, Disney and like the Criterion and all this like shit, like the vault is the worst thing that ever fucking happened. To films.
Yeah, totally. Even Criterion was like doing some anti-physical media stuff like recently. I can't remember what it was. I remember seeing an article and being like, Criterion is like the physical media. It's your brand is to not do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I just bought the extended editions of Lord of the Rings on Blu-ray. And I haven't even opened them yet, but they're on that bookshelf. They're on that bookcase next to the theatrical ones. And I'm just like, hey, it's $40. Like, that's a pretty good price for all three of the movies. And I was explaining to my daughter why I bought them. And I was just like, because now I have them and I like them and I won't lose access to them. And that's just something that they just don't understand. My kids just don't understand.
And I think it's going to take like some event, you know, for the certain type of person to realize, oh shit, I should probably own movies. And did you see that Julia Roberts and Mahershala Ali Leave the World Behind?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like that subplot with the daughter not being able to finish her, what is it, Friends?
Friends, yeah.
Like that was when I was like, oh shit, man, so much of my mindset is like, we're all going to die, the apocalypse is going to happen, and I'm sitting here not having DVDs and Blu-rays available to me to watch when I lose access to streaming? Like, how stupid am I? So who knows, when the apocalypse happens, you're going to be hunky-dory in your little bunker watching your shows and movies.
Yep, I'll finally get around to it.
I'm gonna be doing sock puppets against a fucking like backdrop.
Somebody, please say hello to me.
I'm gonna be acting out movies like Andy Dwyer in that episode of Parks and Rec where he reenacts Rambo.
I'll finally get around to watching my copy of Full Metal Jacket that I bought like 10 years ago and haven't opened. But
well, at least you have it.
At least I have it, and it looks nice. And people take me seriously when they see it.
Even if I haven't seen it.
This man's a cinephile. Well, anyway, no, I'll check out The Beekeeper. If you say so, then I'll take your word for it.
Pour a really, really tall whiskey. Actually, sorry, have two tall whiskeys before starting the movie and watch it with a third very tall whiskey.
See, I'll fall asleep if I have that much whiskey.
I don't know. Not with Jason Statham and his bee puns. Got to protect the hive. He says that about six times. Dude, sorry. The climax of this movie, you will not believe how buck wild it gets. Like, I wish I could spoil it for you just so you could go, what? And then you would definitely watch it. But it would be the worst thing to spoil the climax of that movie.
Okay. Oh, I'm intrigued now. You've got me. All right, Kellen, just for you. I guess that's it.
Okie dokie.
Stop our recording and Scooby-Doo.
Okie dokie. Scooby-Doo-Bap-Bap-Bidaboo. Bye. I'm going to stop recording now.
Got to protect the hive.
Got to protect the hive. You got to take out the queen. Man, you got to watch Beekeeper. Okay, I'm hitting stop.